Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Odegaard, Odegaard, golazo!
Is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunner Blog. James!
LaMelo, you scored, but then you got a red card. You were a dirty cunt, LaMelo. You have won the square root of Fuckle, and it's a morning, you wanker.
That was beautiful.
Thank
That's
you.
That's the best use of a Barry Manilow song I can possibly imagine.
Yeah. Well, it had to be done. Had to be done. What can I tell you?
I mean, he is the worst.
Oh my God. He really is. And look, we maybe have to take some responsibility for what happened yesterday because you rightly pointed out that, just after I tweeted that I hoped someone dropped an anvil on LaMelo's head, he scored. And then, to be fair, you also said when Son was going off, that's positive for us or whatever, those lines.
A boost.
Yeah. So look, we hold our hands up.
We were playing the long game.
That's it. People don't realize, do they?
Exactly. Exactly. We knew it was 4D chess, as they say.
So you're feeling good this morning, I take it. Everyone's feeling good, goodly, goodlier, goodliest, all of that, yeah. I guess.
What a fantastic. I mean, listen, we won the derby. It's a big thing. And, we deserve to win it as well. We played really well for the vast majority of the game.
Yes.
not mentioning the final period, in which was slightly terrifying. But, I feel great. And listen, beating Tottenham always feels good. Beating a Jose Mourinho-led Tottenham, I think, feels extra special.
Yeah, and look, Tottenham are Tottenham, and we all know how we feel about them. But there is a sort of, there's a litany of cunts there. From Mourinho to Lamella to Kane to Dele Alli, who's kind of a peripheral cunt at this point. But still, when he's on the pitch, you kind of remember. So it does feel good. You've all these extra layers to sort of boost how you're feeling when you win a game like that. But, I don't know where we start with this. I mean, I suppose we have to start with the team and the big team news that came out beforehand.
Yes, that Cedric started.
Yes, that was it. What is that click-clicking noise? Are you doing something?
Yeah, maybe. Is it that?
Ah, okay. That's fine. That's fine. Okay. What did you just say? What did
team
you just
news.
Say? Oh, team news. Oh, yeah, Cedric. Yeah, that was the big one. And, of course, the small issue, minor issue of the captain being unceremoniously dropped from the starting lineup because... Well, it turns out he was late to the team meetup and what have you. This is quite interesting, actually, because my initial reaction was I didn't really understand why Mikel Arteta had made it public that it was a disciplinary issue, because the only people who need to learn from disciplinary issues are his team, his players. The whole world he doesn't need to set an example to the whole world. So I was a bit confused by it. It's a big, big decision as well. It really is. I know Lacazette is an experienced player, but Aubameyang's a captain. He's our best goal scorer, our best striker. We're going into a derby. You know, it's a big, big decision that he made. I suppose in the cold light of day, my feeling is I'm still a little confused as to why he made it public, but I imagine he took a calculated risk in fronting up to it, making it a thing, drawing a line under it and hoping that we won so he could just quickly move on from it, because it probably would have come out one way or another anyway. And then he gets accused of, you know, hiding the facts from everyone. So it's a bit of a no-win situation. What were your thoughts?
I was similarly quite surprised that he made that public. You know, these things do happen in football clubs and it's usually excused with an injury or the players being rested. I wonder if maybe he just didn't want to be the manager who didn't pick Aubameyang for the derby of his own volition. You know, I mean, it was a glaring omission, and maybe he felt the need to explain that it wasn't in his hands as he saw it. Ultimately, it is in his hands. He makes the decisions, but it was interesting to go public with it, and a big call, like you say. And if you make a call like that, you have to know it's going to come back to bite you if you don't win. I mean, had Arsenal not won this game, I'm sure that would have been levelled at Mikel Arteta by a lot of people as a piece of criticism, you know, that he'd taken this decision.
For sure. For sure.
Having won it.
It's brave. You know, if that's what your standards are, it is a brave decision, because, like you say, had we not won that game, people would be pointing to Aubameyang's absence from the start as a key factor in it, you know?
But he has this streak to him, Arteta. I mean, let's not forget, he picked an FA Cup final team that had Matt Smith on the bench instead of Mesut Ozil, Mateo Guendouzi. You know, he is prepared to take a stand on these things, and clearly it's really important to him. I think there was a quote from him in one of his TV interviews last night about saying, you know, it's almost as important as, you know, the results and what we do on the pitch. You know, we can't get where we want to go without establishing some of these cultural rules, essentially. It was a really, really big call, and credit to him, it paid off. He comes out of it looking very strong. His authority grows. You know, presumably all will be well. And Aubameyang, he said Aubameyang's available for selection for the next game, and maybe he's learned his lesson. I mean, it's a, you know, it seems like a very meagre thing to leave someone out for, doesn't it, being late? But if it's not somebody's first offence,
well, that's
maybe
it.
If they're the captain as well and expected to set a particular example accordingly, it becomes all the more important that you do something.
Yeah, I mean, look, I can't imagine that on the day of a North London derby, if Aubameyang had turned up late, you know, perhaps it was out of his hands. You know, there was a tweet going around, wasn't there, with him stuck in traffic somewhere?
Yeah, I saw him.
Yeah, I know you tweeted that as well. Yeah, so, you know, if I think any manager would say, okay, look, there was a traffic jam or there was an accident or whatever it was, you know, we have these standards, but don't do it again. I don't think it would, you're getting left out if that's the first time that's happened to you. And it was just like, sorry, there was nothing I could do. Stuck in traffic. You know, I called, I let you know I was on the way, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I think you guys in The Athletic reported that it is not the first time that it's happened. So maybe he just felt, you know, it's one time too many.
Yeah, he missed a COVID test earlier this year as well. You know, there have been a couple of other slightly lax sort of breaches of protocol. And also, I think this is a slightly tricky one, because I think the club were absolutely right to give him as much time off as they did for him to deal with the situation with his mother being unwell. But I suspect, you know, in Mikel Arteta's thoughts is, you know, we have, how can I put it? We have kind of done everything we can to help you in that situation. And so the least that you can do is abide by our rules. And I think that's kind of a reasonable enough position.
Do you think, I mean, we should draw a line under this quickly as well, because it's not the main talking point at all. But do you think, or do you have any concerns that it might have repercussions? Or is this one of those things that, like, okay, he's going to be unhappy about not taking part in the North London derby, and particularly one that we've won, you know, to miss out on that enjoyment, you know, is going to be a painful thing for him. But do you expect it to, you know, for him to sulk or anything like that? Or is this going to be something that's, you know, we move on from quickly?
Yeah, I hope and think the latter. I mean, you know, we reported this morning that he left immediately after the game and didn't take part in the warm down. I don't know if that was with the manager's permission or not.
Right.
I don't know if those, or, you know, I don't know if those warm downs are voluntary or if they're obligatory.
Yeah, yeah.
But he very clearly made an immediate exit after the game, which I think, you know, some people will probably interpret that as a rift. I don't. I see that as a guy who loves to be part of the party, loves to be part of the big games, loves to be on the field scoring goals, who's probably incredibly disappointed, gutted even, I would say, to miss out. That would be my interpretation of those events.
Well, look,
what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I hope, like you, it'll be something that everyone moves past really quickly, because there's a lot still to play for this season, as yesterday's result demonstrated and illustrated. And, you know, it didn't do much for our position in the league table, but 3 big points. And, you know, everything's quite tight in that area of the Premier League table and, of course, the Europa League. So, you know, your responsibility is to the club, to the teammates. You know, you are the captain. Accept it, move on. You don't have to like it, but, you know, maybe show your anger or frustration on the pitch next time you play and take it out on the opposition. That's the best way to do it. So,
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. And just a quick thing on Aubameyang, by the way. Did you feel that the decision not to bring him on was part of the disciplinary thing? Do you think if it was down to purely tactics, do you think he would have come on?
I was looking for him to come on. I think I said on the live blog, "We'll get Aubameyang on just before we got the penalty." And
you used to get him on at half time, didn't you?
Yeah, because I think, you know, listen, Lacazette scored the penalty brilliantly. It was a really great penalty, no question about it. But I thought he had a stinker of a first half. And I'm sure Mikel Arteta must have been a little bit worried, you know, about the decision that he made. He's put Lacazette in, and he didn't make the most of a couple of really good occasions in front of goal. You know, there were maybe 3 I can think of. There was one where Smith Rowe set him up brilliantly and he shanked a shot. There was another one where he stepped over it for some reason.
The sensational dummy for Cedric 50 yards behind him. I thought that was incredible vision on the part of Lacazette. Now, I agree. Listen, I don't think he had.
There was another one as well. Yeah, there was another one. I think Saka put in a cross and he was just caught on his heels, put in a cross where he should have probably got there ahead of the. Maybe he did get there ahead of the defender, but he didn't move in time. So he didn't have a good game, I thought. So I was looking for him to come on. As the game went on, Pepe for Saka was a substitution, wasn't it? Then there was. What was the other one?
I don't know. Elneny was the final one, right?
Elneny was the last one. Yeah, Willian for Smith Rowe.
Yes.
I suppose you could make a case that all of those were tactical rather than any kind of punishment. Like Willian for Smith Rowe didn't work, wasn't a good change, it didn't help us in any way, but you could probably see why he chose to make that change. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wondered, you know, because personally looking at the game, I was thinking we've got to get Aubameyang on here for this last 15 minutes.
Me too. I mean, maybe Elneny that's a, like what we have, we hold substitution. You take your striker off and you put Elneny on to sort of run around and press and what have you. I mean, I'm pretty sure Aubameyang could have done that if, you know, he'd been asked to. So maybe, I don't know. But look, let's leave that particular situation to one side and talk about what was a really good performance from Arsenal in the first half in particular. I think the way we played, some of the chances we created, Smith Rowe I thought was excellent on the left hand side. I thought Martin Odegaard was excellent as well. Very excited Kieran Tierney, you know, roasted Matt Doherty down the left-hand side quite often, which was good. I mean, look, we should have been ahead. We had chances. We hit the bar. We hit the post. There was the Lacazette, chance that he missed. I mean, they really did take Doherty apart down that left, didn't they? Smith Rowe and Tierney in particular. The combinations were fantastic.
Yeah, and speaking to a few Spurs fans, actually, they were surprised he started this game, Doherty. I think a lot of people thought Serge Aurier might play just to kind of cope with Arsenal's athleticism and running power on that flank in Tierney. Doherty didn't have a good game at all. We really made him look very ordinary on that side, and I think a lot of the credit for that's got to go to to Smith Rowe and Tierney, who dovetailed really, really well. I mean, Smith Rowe, you know, he came into the team as number 10, and that's his preferred position. I happen to think he can really do this job from the left-hand side as well. I think it actually suits him, to be honest, to a certain extent. And I think having him and Odegaard in the same team just allows us more options, more variety, more creativity. I thought he was excellent.
I mean, it is a big demonstration of Mikel Arteta's faith in him, isn't it? That he's starting him in a game like this, because he only came back from injury during the week, didn't he? Got a few minutes against Olympiacos. You know,
I think it is. And it also makes me think, you know, we've been sort of kind of pondering about Willian starting on that left-hand side. And I do wonder, is it partly because he's kind of the best proxy for Smith Rowe? I mean, when Smith Rowe's been fit, he's played out there, you know, in recent times.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's only really established himself in the team under Mikel Arteta since the Chelsea game, which was December 26th. And now, when you're starting in a North London derby, it highlights how important you are, or how important the manager sees you. You know, there's a lot of potential, isn't there? I know Odegaard is not our player, and I think I've got a question or two about that for part two, so we'll hang on to that. But, you know, that kind of setup behind a striker is, you can see how you could make real progress with that. Definitely. As a team, you know what I mean?
Definitely. And I think what Tierney did, what Smith Rowe did really brilliantly as well, was he allowed Tierney to overlap, and that combination was really effective. I do think there is something happening in this team. It is tricky, you know, because like you say, you look at the league table, you're elated after that win, and then you look at the league table and you sort of go, oh. But, I'm quite big on this idea that maybe the league table does lie. At the moment, I do feel like we're slightly better than we're showing.
When it suits us, I guess it does.
Yeah,
it does,
exactly. Yeah, but Tottenham are above us.
Yeah. But look, that's the part
it's
of being a football
fan. Lying for years.
Yeah. It's been really wrong since 2004,
as far as I'm aware.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. So look, we're playing well, and then they score what's clearly, you know, a fluke of a goal from Lamela.
Yeah, he trips over his own feet.
Absolutely
sickening, I have to say. Just being there, I was directly in line behind it. I sort of saw the execution, saw it go through Partey's legs, knew the player it was as well. I mean, Lamela, from the minute he came on, I think the first thing he did, and to an extent, who can blame any Premier League footballer for doing this, but I think the first thing he did was go over and sort of have a go at Granit Xhaka and think, you know, can I wind this guy up?
He did have he had a kick at, was it Partey as well?
Tierney he was involved with Tierney as well, pretty early.
I mean, he's just a prick. There's no two ways about it. He's a snide prick. And for that reason alone, I will not give him any credit whatsoever for the goal. None.
Yeah. I was just on Mark Chapman's podcast this morning, and I was saying, do you think Spurs will release a DVD just of the goal? That 1 minute of the game. Very possibly. But yeah, listen, we don't have to give it any credit whatsoever. From an Arsenal perspective, any complaints?
I maybe wonder if we could have closed down the crossfield ball from Bale a bit quicker. It's opportunistic, you know, and sometimes it's really difficult to... I mean, it's not like we made a big, big error, you know, like in the previous games. So, you know, that was another relatively pleasing part of yesterday, is that there was no glaring error. There were a couple of iffy tackles late on in those final 10 minutes, which provided them with some dangerous situations, which we might not have looked on quite as kindly had something else happened. But, you know, there wasn't the big, big error, the big clangor that you know, has haunted us and caused us so many problems in the last few weeks.
And that was their first shot.
I remember seeing the stat come up, and it's like Arsenal 6 shots, Spurs 1 shot, 1 goal. It felt very fucking familiar and very Mourinho, and I didn't like it. I really, really, really didn't like it at all.
Well, no, because it played into their kind of game plan. I mean, Spurs fans, enjoyably, are up in arms about their performance in this game. And I do understand it, because Mourinho picked the lineup he's been picking recently, which is a pretty attack-minded one. You know, he had Lucas Moura in behind Kane, Bale and Son on either side. You know, he had Ndombele playing as a deep midfielder rather than as the most advanced. It was a team that said they come here to attack and to go for it. And they just didn't really do that until the final 10 minutes.
It was mental. It was like somebody flicked a switch on Lucas Moura and said, hey, you're good at football. You should, you know, do things with the ball.
Do you know you're Brazilian?
Oh, wow. Fuck, I've probably got some skills here. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
But they, for the personnel they had, they, and given, you know, some of our vulnerabilities and our, you know, the mistakes we do tend to make at the back, they weren't able to mount any pressure on us whatsoever in that first 70 minutes.
They didn't, though, did they? I mean, there were moments where we had the ball at the back and we were playing it around, Luiz and Gabriel, and you're looking, you know, they're obviously staying within the confines of whatever structure Mourinho had put on them. But there were moments where I was thinking, you know what, if they just pushed forward a little bit and pressed us, you know, they could probably exploit that little weakness we've had, but they didn't. And obviously they wanted to keep things compact. It was quite telling how we were looking for the long ball behind so often early on. It worked a few times. There were a couple of really great passes. I think one from David Luiz.
I spoke to Rafa Honigstein. He was at the game doing Sky Germany, and he said to me, I can't get over Spurs the way they play. He said, they play a high line, but they don't press.
Mm.
And it was a really weird passive performance. I'm not at all trying to take credit away from Arsenal, more just having a go at Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, quite right.
If that's all right with everyone.
That's fine, I think. That's fine. So look, 1-0, and you're thinking, okay, we've been here before. And I was very much of the opinion that the one thing we had to do was make sure we didn't concede a second goal like we did in the game earlier in the season, where we conceded not long before halftime. And I was thinking, okay, well, look, just get to halftime. Don't concede a goal just before halftime, because that's been a bit of a feature of our season, you know, letting goals in not long before the break, whether it's a concentration thing or whatever it might be. But to do the other thing and actually score a goal was very pleasant. I enjoyed it a lot. I think we should do that more, to be
that'd be nice,
quite honest.
It?
Yeah. Good goal.
Let's hope the world never gets wise to Kieran Tierney's stop and go trick. I think it is just very difficult to prevent him doing it. He is exceptional at that. You know, the way he kind of turns his body, stops completely dead, knocks it beyond the guy and goes again.
Classic,
it's really,
push
really
and
effective.
Run stuff, isn't it? You know, you don't, it's not particularly subtle. It feels quite old-fashioned, you know, when you think about how skillful players make space for themselves, whether it's dribbling or whatever it might be. His is, I'm not going to say industrial, it's great and it's really effective, but you know, I think you're right that you know, they know what he's going to do, still can't stop him doing it. So
exactly, there's no way they don't prepare for it. And I guess the difference is, you know, someone like, say, Kolasinac, he would knock it and run, but his body shape always remained the same. If you watch Kieran Tierney, he's got, kind of got these snake hips, and he manages to really feint one way and move the other.
Snake hips, I like it.
Yeah, old snake hips Tierney, as they call it. That's his dressing room nickname. And I love it. And he did really well, not only to get beyond the guy, but once he got there, his delivery was very deliberate. I thought it's a good pick out.
He deliberately didn't give the ball to Lacazette and deliberately gave it to Martin.
I'm not making that mistake again, because it was just moments after the one Lacazette stepped over, I think, which led to Cedric hitting the post. And Odegaard takes up a really good position. I mean, I have to be honest and say I didn't really think this would be a facet of his game, this ability to arrive around the penalty spot, but he's making a habit of it.
I think it's new. It's certainly new. Mm-hmm. It's not something he did. Well, then, no, I'm thinking about the Villa game. Remember the shot that he missed in the Villa game? So maybe it is, but yeah, to have a player like that arrive in the box and the timing of that, I mean, that is sort of what, I think we said it the other day, didn't we? It's kind of what you would associate with Smith Rowe. You know, he's that guy who arrives and who is in that position, but, you know, Odegaard finished A little deflection off Alderweireld, but ball's in the back of the net, and it's 1-1, just going into halftime. Can I ask you, were you as irritated as I was by Martin Tyler not understanding the concept of 2 minutes? Oh,
I
you didn't see
I was at the ground, so I was spared that experience.
Right. So they announced 2 minutes of time added on at the end of the half, and it's about 1 minute and 20 seconds into that, and we have a throw or a corner, I think, towards the end, and Martin Tyler's like, well, the 2 minutes are up. Tottenham will be very unhappy now if Arsenal get something from this. You know, I don't know what the referee's thinking here. He's well over the allotted 2 minutes of time, and it's like, did nobody just sort of give him a... Martin, it's like, it's 2 minutes. You just play with one. I don't understand what was going on there. I found that quite
irritating. That is bizarre. I think that can only be compared to, I think Martin Keown called a Rabona a Ribena on Match of the Day 2 last night, which I enjoyed. But yeah, listen, it was fantastic to get the equaliser just before half-time. And we had hit the woodwork twice. Yeah. I mean, I'm still gutted for Emile Smith-Rowe about that shot off the woodwork.
Keeper was beating all ends up, wasn't he?
A star-making moment, really, for him, but... There you go.
So, a substitution at halftime, Pepe for Saka, an injury worry. They said he felt something in his hamstring. So, that's an obvious change.
It's kind of like for like, isn't it? You know, on that right-hand side, they do similar roles. And Pepe's playing very well at the moment. I mean, if you had to compare the two halves, I think Pepe had the better game than Saka did.
I think so. Saka was quite quiet and, again, took a fair bit of punishment, a few kicks and what have you. So, look, fingers crossed he's not out. But, look, when you've got somebody with the quality of Pepe to replace Bukayo Saka, you're not doing too badly. So what else did we do then in that... in that second half, they took Bale off.
Much to the irritation of Spurs fans again, which I enjoyed.
How do you know so much about what Spurs fans are thinking?
I look on Twitter. I look on Twitter because I like seeing how angry they get with Mourinho, and it's really good fun.
Do you just, have you got random people to follow or specific people?
I follow some Spurs fans that I know, but also, you know, Jose out, Mourinho out. Those hashtags have been doing some good business in the last 24 hours.
Okay, so 62 minutes on the live blog. I say, get Aubameyang on. Second later, we get a penalty.
Your jinxing powers were in full effect.
Fucking hell. Magic. So, what...
Credits Nicola Pepe, by the way.
I mean, that is a sensational pass. A sensational pass. I mean, I think it kind of summed up Lacazette's day in a way, that he whiffed at that shot. You know, it was a brilliant, brilliant ball from Pepe.
And not just a ball. I think he kind of pulls it out the sky. I think it's like an interception and then a pass immediately. I've not been able to confirm that because the TV cameras were actually showing a replay of something else. But I think it's like a goal kick or a pass out towards the Tottenham left back. Maybe it's Reguilón, and he chases back, wins it and gives it. It's a really good bit of play.
Right. I'd have to... Are you're saying we can't see it on the TV?
I don't think the live broadcast had it. I think they were showing a replay of something else that had just happened. Maybe Lacazette had that shot on the spin. I forget exactly what it was.
Looking at it here.
But let's have a look. Why not? You might be able to confirm it.
Oh, yeah, he does, actually. Yeah, they just cut to him and he intercepts it. And it's a first-time pass. I mean, what a pass that is. That is unbelievable.
So it's a bit of defensive play and a bit of creative play rolled into one.
Yeah, you know, and I think he has been unlucky not to be more involved of late, Pepe. I think he has, you know. So when he comes on and makes that kind of a contribution, I'm really glad to see it for him, obviously for us as well, because it shows, I guess, a level of determination to have an influence when he does get his chances. You know, rather than somebody feeling sorry for themselves, like, and if he was feeling a little bit sorry for himself or a little bit unhappy that he hasn't been used, you wouldn't blame him too much. So, you know, to have that impact yesterday was really very pleasing.
Yeah, I mean, that was the narrative for his first 18 months in the club, maybe. You know, has he been made to feel like he belongs? Does he feel important in the team? Has his confidence been knocked by him not being selected? at the moment, his confidence doesn't seem to be knocked whether he plays or not. And when he's coming on, he's having a massive impact. Now, I mean, that's a bit of a double-edged sword if you're Nicola Pepe. You don't want to become the impact guy. You don't want to become the last 20 minutes guy. But I have to credit him for the attitude that he is showing in what must be a frustrating period. You know, that he's not doing a lot wrong. And yet, equally, you look at Arteta's decision to start Smith Rowe and Saka yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, you can understand why he made that call as well. So it's a tricky one.
It is. I mean, I'm guessing he was asking Saka to push through and rest him for the Olympiacos game. So fingers crossed there isn't too much wrong with him because, you know...
He was on the pitch at full time. He was walking with a slight hobble, but he seemed in very good spirits. So I think if they were too concerned about him, I'm not sure they would have let him do that. Arteta said he was feeling something in his hamstring. So we'll see. I don't think he'll play against Olympiacos, given the lead we have in that game. And maybe that's fine and the rest will do him some good.
Yep. So penalty and Lacazette, as I said earlier, I think it was a really, really good penalty. Really good.
Well, we've not discussed the decision yet, Andrew.
Well, what's to discuss? I watched Match of the Day 2 last night with astonishment. I just could not believe what Jermaine Genus was talking about. I saw him on Twitter say to somebody, "You don't understand football," because they had a go at him for the whatever it was he was saying about the penalty. Imagine.
I mean, the thing is, I found Jermaine Genus absolutely hilarious. I really, really... I don't watch Match of the Day that much, I must confess.
Well, I haven't watched it much this season because we keep having shit results. So.
Yeah, and we're probably always on last, right? Because we're banging in the middle of mid-table.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed... Yeah, exactly. I really enjoyed Match of the Day 2 last night. With the penalty, I think it is a penalty. I do kind of understand that idea of Lacazette. It's Lacazette's shot that carries through into the contact. Do you see what I mean? Like, in the same way that I felt like David Luiz didn't make that challenge on the Wolves fella, Lacazette basically kicks the Spurs defender as he comes across. So I can see why there's a debate about it.
No. Not for me. From a logic-based standpoint, perhaps. But I'm sitting here this morning with my Arsenal hat on, and no. And just
If anybody asks you what I think, I think it's a stonewall penalty. I think he should have been sent off. You know, but if I'm just kind of, you know, stepping out of myself, I can understand. But lots
step
of Tottenham fans.
Step
you know these Tottenham fans
yourself.
Who I'm always reading and listening and engaging with? A lot of them said, that's a penalty. That's getting given.
Well, I mean, look, if we had seen David Luiz do that and a penalty was given, I don't think we'd be complaining really about the decision.
We'd be complaining about he's asking for trouble.
He's done it again. He's out of control. He's hurtling through the box. I mean, it's a very Mustafi penalty to give away, if you like. You could certainly see him do it. Go on.
If Lacazette makes good contact with the shot, do you think it gets given?
That's a good question. That's a good question. Like if he forces a save from the goalkeeper or it's the post or something. I'm not sure. Maybe it was...
Or even if it just goes out of play, do you know what I mean? If it goes behind.
Yeah.
Because there seems to be a bit of a sort of free-for-all. If the striker gets his shot away, as far as I'm aware, you can shoot them, with a rifle. I mean, it is an interesting sort of facet of the game, that. I do wonder if he'd got good... I think it's one of those where whatever the referee gave... I'm not sure VAR would have overturned it. I think it's one of those ones.
Yeah, we've seen, of course, and we're overdue one, and we should have had one against Burnley last week, of course, with Pepe. So we're due a decision. But you have to remember that this is a season in which did I see who was it? Was it Liverpool? I think it was Liverpool, where one of their defenders was kind of. Sliding in the box and the guy ran into the back of him. He kneed the defender in the head and fell over and got a penalty.
Well, then if that's a penalty, then ours is 1,000% a penalty.
Mega penalty.
And let me tell you, I was sat just behind Jose Mourinho in the dugout. He had access to replays. He was going absolutely mental saying it wasn't a penalty. So for it to be upheld was a very satisfying
Well, I did moment. Enjoy his post-game interview. I don't normally watch the opposition post-game interviews, but on this occasion, I gave myself the pleasure of watching Mourinho complain bitterly and saltily about how it was never a penalty and how Michael Oliver's decisions were astonishing, like when it comes to penalties, whether it was with Chelsea or Man United and now Tottenham. Astonishing, like his record of penalties. He's such a good referee, but his, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, look, he can stick it up his arse, to be perfectly honest.
Even if it wasn't a penalty, which I don't think, I think it was, but even if it hadn't been, it's classic deflection from Mourinho because on the balance of play, Tottenham did not really deserve anything at all from this game.
No, I agree. I agree. And I think, you know, in many ways, Michael Oliver was quite generous towards Tottenham yesterday with his reluctance to get the yellow card out throughout the game. Now, I know that sounds weird because I had a man sent off, and we'll laugh about that now in a second. But, you know, there were moments where I thought they were led away with a lot of stuff. I think there was a foul by Højbjerg at one point, and he called him over and he had that word with him. You know, that, like, don't do it again, because otherwise... And then he did it again, and he didn't do anything. You know, there were a number of fouls. He does, yeah. Well, I mean, as a team, I think they tend to get away with
a lot. Well, we'll get on to Harry Kane. By the way, just quickly, what a good penalty it was. I have to be honest and say I had my doubts. He's a very good penalty taker.
He is.
I shouldn't have doubted him.
He is. Well, no, I mean, I understand why he had some doubts, because he'd had a poor game.
Yeah.
Really. You know, credit to him for slotting that penalty away under a lot of pressure, but I think he had a poor game overall. So if a moment, you know, it can happen in a game where you think, well, that just sums up the bad day that Alexander Lacazette has had. He played really badly, and then he missed a penalty. But he didn't. It was a really unsavable penalty. Even if Lloris had gone the right way, there was no way really he was saving penalty. That. So, you know, credit where it's due for the execution on that one. Speaking of execution, that brings us nicely to Eric Lamella. I mean, the first...
How Genius is claiming that's not sending off? I think that is a more the more clear sign of a pundit having a mental breakdown than the penalty thing. I mean...
Unreal. Unreal. Yeah. I mean, he should have been booked well before that, because he was involved with Xhaka. He was involved with Partey. He had a little kick out off the ball at Partey. There was a foul on Smith Rowe early in the second half, where basically Smith Rowe had burst past him on the left-hand side, carrying the ball out of defence. And Lamella, you know, did what that guy did to Lacazette early in the first half. He basically hauled him down. It was a rugby tackle kind of thing. One of those where it's a very deliberate, very cynical foul. Again, Michael Oliver chose not to issue a yellow card on either occasion. And, you know, it's just a bit strange. I know you say, well, look, there's got to be some kind of physical aspect to the game, but cynical fouls like that, where there's literally no attempt whatsoever to play the ball, are yellow cards.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was lucky not to have been booked before the first one. Maybe he got the ball for the first challenge on Partey, but he came in from behind. So what's he expecting?
Absolutely. And, you know, the second one, he's very stupid. He raises his arm to Tierney. There's a good replay, actually, I've seen doing the round social media with Mourinho in the background. Have you seen that one?
Yeah.
I think Mourinho's reaction is one of, oh shit, I can't believe you've just done that.
Yeah.
I think it's that, and not sort of having a go at Tierney for falling to the ground. I think Mourinho, you could see, kind of knows exactly what Lamella has done and what it's going to cost him and Spurs.
Yeah.
Although, bizarrely enough, it kind of proved to be the catalyst for them getting back into the game.
Oof, okay. I mean, we do have to talk about the final 10 minutes then.
Yeah, shame.
Yeah. Well, look, on a scale of 1 to 100, where 1 is not scared at all and 100 is terrified out of your mind, where would you say you were during that period? What was your peak level of fear?
High. When Harry Kane heads that ball in, the split second before the offside flag goes up, you know, I'm in the 90s.
Oh, right? My stomach flipped. Genuinely, my stomach flipped. And, thank goodness he was offside.
And he was very clearly offside. But,
yeah.
I mean, it's such a weird one. You know, at 75 minutes, or whatever it was. I was looking at Arsenal and thinking, this has been a masterclass in controlling Harry Kane. I mean, the guy's not had a kick. And I still think that's true. I think Gabriel had a really good game, you know, up until that point.
I thought Gabriel and Luis were very good.
Yeah, yeah. And Gabriel particularly dominated Kane aerially, physically, in a way that not many Premier League centre-backs do.
Yeah, so much so that, like, Kane took it out on him with the kind of foul that...
100% that's what happened. 100% that's... His frustration at not being in the game and Gabriel basically mastering him during the course of this match, and how that's not attracted more attention. I mean, I say I enjoyed Match of the Day. They didn't show that once.
No, you know? I had a message from, I'm just trying to find it here, from boom, 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 from Sam Palerm, who's down under, and he was telling us that, an AFL player did what Kane did to Gabriel in preseason and got a one-match ban. So, you know, it was really dangerous. It was reckless. It was violent. It was frustrated. He could have caused him some serious injury because, you know, if his shoulder connects with Gabriel's jaw or cheekbone or whatever it is, you know, he causes him a serious injury there. And I think... the England captaincy thing is obviously part of it, but it's really terrible on the part of the media to completely overlook something like that because, and simply because, he is the England captain and a golden boy. I can guarantee you that if that was a different player, I'm not saying an Arsenal player necessarily, but I can guarantee you that there are players in this league who, if they carried out that kind of foul, this would be shown time and time again. Or if, for example, that foul was perpetrated upon Harry Kane, you wouldn't hear the fucking end of it. So, you know, at this point in his career, having seen him do countless things which could cause serious injury to a player, I think he is really lucky. And the people involved in the incidents that he's been involved in are really lucky that nobody has been badly injured. And it's, you know, I'll say it's a matter of time, you know, before it happens. Maybe it won't ever happen. I hope it doesn't ever happen. But if it does happen, nobody can say that it's a shock or a surprise.
No, and there clearly is kind of a symbiotism, a relationship between the way the media react to these events and I think the punishments that are handed out for them. I mean, we saw that ourselves. Who remembers Eduardo's dive? You know, that the media furore around that issue, I think, engendered the disciplinary action. And I think with Kane, there's a willingness, a desire almost to sweep some of these things under the carpet. It's nothing new. We all remember some of the stuff Alan Shearer got away with in his playing days.
Yeah, yeah.
Elbowing on people, stamping on people.
Kicking Neil Lennon in the head.
Yeah. I mean, all sorts of stuff.
Didn't, I mean, Harry Maguire got away with something. Was it this season or last season where he booted someone in the balls and got away with it?
Yeah. He got away with something in Greece as well. But, I think, I think it is a frustrating thing, certainly, because... it's a really egregious foul on Gabriel yesterday, and one that's purely a player who is frustrated. Yeah. That said, last 10 minutes, Spurs managed to
hit the
get
post
him into the game. Mm. Yeah, they start doing better things in wide areas, crossing the ball better.
Lucas Moura remembers he's Brazilian.
Lucas Moura remembers he finds his passport in his sock. and Gabriel, who, as I say, I thought had a very good game, makes a vital, vital block.
Unbelievable piece of defending that, because when the ball came back off the post, do you have any issue with Bernd Leno for that?
Oh, like, I hadn't thought of that. I'd have to see it again. Let me have a look if I can find it now.
Yeah.
Do you, then?
I do wonder, should he... I mean, if that ball was more accurate, I think it was going in. I don't think Leno would have got there. I could be wrong. I'd have to watch it back again myself. But I remember thinking at the time I had a little bit of a worry about his positioning.
Let me tell you this, from within the ground, I don't know to what extent this was clear on television. Arsenal were terrified, I think.
Yeah.
They were really tense. And you could see it in the interaction between players. there were not rows, but, you know, very vocal disagreements. There was one where Shaka fouled someone on the edge of the box, and he turned and he was furious with Louise, particularly, I think, and Gabrielle as well, for dropping off and allowing Spurs to come onto them. There was an incident where Louise lost his rag with somebody about, I think it was with Thomas Partey, maybe, of the concession foul.
Yeah. A corner. There was a Partey gave away a corner.
That's right. And that was kind of, not so much on the sidelines, but on the pitch.
Yeah.
It was very palpable.
I mean, you never got the sense that we had an extra man. That's the weird thing about it.
It almost seems mad to say that we had the extra man. You know, it felt like we had one man less.
Yeah, I'm looking at that again. I think we'd be critical of Leno had that gone in, because he took a step the wrong way.
Yeah, and his hand's not even outstretched, really. It sort of looks like he's almost half leaving it.
Yeah.
Comes off the post, comes back. What a great block.
Brilliant piece of defending from Gabriel. That is absolutely sensational. Really.
How do you feel about the Cedric lying on the floor technique?
Aside. It's a new thing, isn't it? I mean, I've seen other teams do it.
I can't blame him for not being able to watch. I felt exactly the same at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing they're just trying to block the low shot under the wall. So the wall jumps, and to make your wall bigger, you know, you have the guy at the bottom to block off any shot that's going to go underneath the wall. So, look, it looks a bit weird. We've seen it done a few times this season as well. Hector Bellerin has done it, I remember, in one of the games, or a couple of the games. Hector Bellerin has been the guy behind the wall. So it's there to give your wall a bit more size.
Mm.
It's odd looking, though.
It is odd looking, yeah. I guess Kane bends it around the wall. I can't quite tell from
the
angle.
He does,
Yeah, I mean, the ball comes out and Sanchez has a chance to redeem himself. And it's just, you know, sometimes in a situation like that, you know, when Pepe had the shot against Burnley, that came off the bar, came off the guy's shoulder, and everyone was like, wow, you know, what a block. And I was like, yeah, but he was just sort of stood in the way. With Gabriel, he gets his head on that.
It's great defending.
I mean?
Like, it's great defending.
It's not going to hit him anyway. He moves to block it. It's really...
Well, I mean,
really
the fact that he's there as well, you know, he's in the
true,
right
he's
position.
Recovered
you know,
to that
he's
position.
Got in,
yeah.
You know, he's not standing or ball watching or anything like that. So, you know, he's in the right area, and it is just a great, great piece of defending. But, you know, in... the fact that we've won this game and those last 10 minutes were as terrifying as they were. And I'll admit, I was sort of close to about 99.99999.
We didn't want to see 5 come up on that board, that's for sure.
Oh, my God. You know, there were some crosses and
Louise got to one, didn't he?
We couldn't keep the ball. Leno, why he decided when we had 11 versus 10, that was the time to start booting it long to nobody.
to El Nedi.
My God. It's like, just we've got the extra man. I realize that there's a lot of pressure and you're hanging on in a way, which sounds weird when you're playing against 10 men. But, you know, I get it. You know, football matches have their own momentum, and it really swung too far in Tottenham's way. Does that, though, now that we've won and we're discussing it the morning after, does that make you feel happier because you can see that the Spurs fans that you're following had these glimmers of hope where they're like, if only, and then it didn't come to pass and we still won?
Does it make me happier? No, I don't think it makes me happier. I would have loved to have just seen it out serenely. But I'm not overly concerned about it. You know, I liked how honest Mikel Arteta was about it. He couldn't have been more honest. I think he said it was the worst 10 minutes we've ever played under him. He might be right. I mean, it was a kind of diabolical lack of control. I don't know. I guess I just ascribe that to a bit of fatigue. I mean, someone like Thomas Partey looked dead on his feet, I think, by that point in the game.
He did, yeah.
But I think as well, just just nerves. You know, it was a big result for Arsenal, a big day, and they, you know, it got to them. I think Arteta maybe made a mistake in terms of not really having a centre forward, a focal point on the field. I do think that maybe handed them the initiative a bit. You know, I don't know if Aubameyang was an option truly, but if he was, I think that would have given Spurs more to worry about at the other end and prevented them coming onto us quite so easily.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think we should have had him on earlier. I think Lacazette was he faded a bit, as did Partey, you know. So he wasn't alone.
We surrendered the initiative a bit, you know.
That's a good way of putting it. But we still won, so fuck them.
Listen, I do think these North London derby games are generally mental. And I think it's very difficult to analyse them objectively. And to be honest, I'm not that interested in doing it. You know, we won.
Yeah.
And that's all it's about for me.
It's been a good week. All in all, it's been a good week. You know, we did have that that big win in Greece and, against Olympiacos. And I know there was a sort of stain on the tablecloth, if you like, in terms of how we conceded the goal that we did. But we did score three away goals in Europe. And when you were looking at you know, the week that was coming up, Olympiacos, then Spurs, then Olympiacos again, I was hopeful, obviously, but not hugely confident that this was going to turn out quite as well as it did. So it's really great this morning to sort of wake up and not feel a sense of in the pit of your stomach, and instead it's excitement and it's enjoyment, and there's Schadenfreude and there's things to like about what we did and how we did it, and encouraging things about the way that we played. And Tottenham lost, and Mourinho is sad, and Kane is sad, and Lamela got sent off. You know, it's a cocktail of glee, if you like. That's not a cue for a song, by the way.
And Arteta breaks his derby duck, I think, here.
Yeah.
I mean, he's beaten all of our other big rivals. Now he's got the first win over Spurs. Just a shame, as always with these games, not to have the fans there.
Yeah.
Really, really fun one.
It really would have. It really would have. I mean,
they would have really enjoyed seeing Jose Mourinho losing his shit on the touchline. I'm certain of that.
But would you have had the chance, James, to take a selfie with Mourinho looking distraught in the background if fans had been there? That's the other thing.
Can I tell you what happened there? So
yeah.
I was basically at the end of the games. Typically, they do all the post-match TV interviews. You know, the managers, it's quite amazing, actually. They have sort of four, you know, little screens set up. They do them in front of, and they just go one by one by one by one. They get asked the same questions by everybody, and they give slight variations on the same answer.
Yeah.
But it's quite fun to listen into those and see if some of those slight variations, you know, provide you with any insight. And Mourinho had reached the end of his, and he was doing his last interview with a couple of people. And as I walked by, I was just making my way out the stadium, I could hear him talking about the penalty and complaining about it. And it just made me laugh and smile so much that I thought, I'm going to capture this moment for posterity. And I was really pleased because I posted it on Twitter and Instagram, and a lot of people got in touch to say, you are wearing a mask, but it's very clear nonetheless how much you're smiling. You can see the delight in my eyes.
Smiling with your eyes, James.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, he is our mortal sworn enemy.
Yeah.
And may it always remain the case.
Yeah. People shouldn't overlook that. There's some great pictures doing the rounds as well. There's one with Arteta
and Cedric. Yeah.
And it looks like they're kind of going, look at that cunt. Look at him. And they're probably not. I mean, they could be. I hope they are. But, you know, Mourinho kind of has this look on his face as well. Yeah, glorious. Great fun. Like you say, a shame we couldn't be there, and hopefully we'll get back there soon, because I think, you know, people and football fans and everyone needs to experience moments and games like that. They mean such a great deal to everyone, you know, so fingers crossed we can get there sooner rather than later.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm sure all the listeners enjoyed it wherever they were watching. And yeah, this is a really dislikable Tottenham team, not just because of Mourinho. We mentioned Kane. There are a few other characters, Lamela. Joe Hart sat in front of me, right?
Joe Hart?
Four seats. Yeah, he's their sub goalie.
Oh, yeah.
and he was about four seats in front of me, and he kept shouting at Harry Kane, "Come on, H, you can do it, H, it's coming, H."
It never did come. Never came.
And I was so pleased.
Lovely. And on that hilarious note, we will take a break, and we're going to come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
It's the history of the Tottenham. It's the history of the Tottenham. It's the history of the Tottenham. They miss always something. They concede many chances every game. Many chances every game. It's the history of the Tottenham. 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 It's the history of the Tottenham.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two, where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog. Also on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. James, you've got to start there, because Mahir has a very important question. And he says, what do you think of Tottenham?
Oh, shit.
What do you think of shit?
Tottenham.
Thank you.
Do you know what, Andrew? That is quite all right.
Another one from Chaos Attack Squirrel Team Lead, which is a great name. He says, good morning, guys. I did a small experiment last night. I'd like you to verify the results. It appears, for all intents and purposes, that North London is red. Can you please confirm? Thanks in advance.
Hang on. Let me just have a look out the window now.
Live.
Yeah. It's looking pretty red out there. I'll be honest with you guys.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Town's been painted red.
Brilliant. That's all we needed to know.
Delighted. Okay, let's have another question, shall we?
Why not?
Let's start with this, because we've had so many questions about it. So Queen Guna, who's at Sofia, has asked, how do we solve a problem like Martinelli? But then Kevin Singleton, in response to that question, has said, what is the obsession with Martinelli? He's been out injured and players have stepped up to the plate in his absence. Willian's playing better, Pepe too, Saka and Smith-Rowe have been brilliant. So where does he fit in against players with form? He'll get his chance when form dips. Where do you sit on Gabby Martinelli, who missed out on this squad entirely?
Yeah, that's a bit of a strange one that he wasn't even in the squad. But look, I think he's a really exciting, talented young player. I do wonder if it's more of a thing from the outside than it is on the inside. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw him celebrate one of the goals against Olympiacos the other night. I can't remember which one. Maybe it was Elneny's, or I don't quite remember. Could have been Gabriel's, maybe the header, fellow Brazilian, etc., etc. And he looked very happy that we'd scored, which sounds obvious. But, you know, he doesn't appear to be demonstrating any sign of discord or unhappiness or anything like that. You know, if you look at what we've got on the left-hand side with Emile Smith-Rowe and the kind of player he is and what he does in that position,
yeah,
that's not what Gabriel Martinelli does, and that's not who he is. So, it seems like, you know, what we want to do on the left-hand side in particular games doesn't really suit him or the way that he plays. And we've talked before, haven't we, about what his final position might be or where he might play, and it might well be centre forward. That might be the position that he plays. So to play there, he's got Aubameyang in front of him, and he's got Lacazette in front of him, and for a while he had Nketiah in front of him as well. So my feeling is that, like, while I want to see more of him, and I think it's a little bit strange that he hasn't seen too many minutes, because he had a really positive impact when he came back from injury. He did have a positive impact. I think, you know, it was really exciting to see him come back into the team and be effective. So it is a little bit of a surprise. But at the end of the day, he is only 19. And we have spoken before, haven't we, about young players being eased into action. We used the Phil Foden example at Man City, where everyone there, all their fans are screaming and screaming for him to be starting games. And you know, he didn't. And was eased into action, and perhaps the benefits of that are evident in what Phil Foden is doing now. So I'm not massively worried about the situation or anything like that at this moment in time.
No, and there might be a physical component to it as well, you know, given the injury that he's come back from. I do think it is principally a tactical thing. That's what everyone seems to say around the club. And, you know, he's a bit unfortunate in that the areas he plays are really congested. I mean, it could be worse. It could be Reece Nelson playing with the under-23s. You know, there's clearly a lot of options in that part of the pitch.
I mean,
I just wanted to give a... Sorry.
Yeah, go on. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I wanted to give a shout-out to this question from Geezy, at Geezy P, from Ricky, who said, I've come up with a mad theory that Martinelli isn't playing because Madrid want him, and he'll be part of a swap involving Odegaard and maybe Ceballos too. With that in mind, would you say an Odegaard type is more important to this team than a Martinelli? I just wanted to shout that out as like a top conspiracy madness theory.
Based on absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows? He might be right. I certainly haven't heard anything to that effect.
No. I mean, I think, you know... it's a good question, though. Like, is an Odegaard type more important to this team than a Martinelli? And you might say at this moment, yes. You know,
I mean, I
when
think
we've
the
got Aubameyang, and you know,
yeah, I think the player who's sort of giving Martinelli the most problems in a way is probably Nicola Pepe. You know, in that what they contribute as wingers, as wide players in terms of goal threat, you know, is kind of similar of a type. And we're saying, look, Pepe's not getting enough minutes, so I think it's just kind of circumstance. To be honest with you, I think you can look at the bench yesterday and say, do we need Hector Bellerin, Callum Chambers, and Rob Holding, you know, and Mohamed Elneny? Do you know what I mean? Like,
there are enough
players of a similar type that you think there'd be room, but maybe Arteta didn't really see a scenario in which he would need Martinelli on the field.
Yeah, I mean, certainly you could make a good case, you know, if we were talking about bringing Aubameyang on, you know, Martinelli as somebody who could come on at centre forward might have been useful yesterday. So
that would have been really useful.
Yeah. So I don't quite know why he wasn't on the bench. I mean, obviously they weren't expecting for Aubameyang to be late. Do you know, I mean, I don't know, are the non-involved players still required to be there on match days? Like, everyone was fit yesterday. So, you know, the likes of Reece Nelson, Gabriel Martinelli, etc., who weren't in the squad, are they there?
I don't believe
not.
So.
Right.
I believe, as a rule, there's one surplus player. Certainly when they travel to away games, they take a surplus player in case somebody is ill or has to drop out through injury at the last minute. I don't know if they do that at home because maybe it'd be easier to call somebody up if required. They might not need to be present. So, no, I think for COVID reasons, it's not like everybody's around. You know, ordinarily during the season, they'd all be sat there, you know, behind the subs bench a lot of the time. But I don't think that is the case at the moment.
Okay.
So I guess Martinelli was probably watching it from the sofa like the rest of us.
Right. On the Discord, Metofferson says, Smith Rowe looked really good yesterday on the left. Should that be a serious option for us going forward? I think having two creators on the pitch just makes us more potent in attack. And Chris Michael on Twitter, who's at CMike1970, says, after Emile Smith Rowe's performance yesterday, do you think he should be first choice on the left of midfield if we sign Odegaard permanently? permanently? Could we have a Pires-esque player on our hands? The contrast when Willian came on for him was extreme. And I think we talked earlier about how, you know, why those last 10 minutes were as poor as they were. I don't think it was necessarily just because Willian came on, although I don't think it particularly helped. So, yeah, let's talk Smith Rowe first, and then I've got a question about Odegaard.
Well, Smith Rowe, I think, has qualities that mean he absolutely can play in wide areas. He's got a sprint for a start. You know, you don't get, if you think of your sort of classic number 10, even the ones who are still playing in the Premier League, people like James Maddison, they're not really sprinters like Bruno Fernandes in the traditional sense. Smith Rowe does have that over 5-10 yards. We saw it, I think, in the build up to that shot Lacazette, when he stepped over it, when he should have hit it, Smith Rowe just absolutely roasted his fullback there. And I think he can do that. He's willing to run in behind, makes good diagonal runs, can drop into the centre. I mean, look at the position he takes the shot on from which he hits the woodwork in the first half. Very, very central position. There is a kind of natural, if you think of our formation as it kind of gets laid out at kickoff on the TV graphics, there's kind of a natural pull over towards the right flank because Odegaard wants to go out and play there generally a lot of the time. And Smith Rowe can come inside a little bit and create an overlap for Tierney. So I think it really suits him. And Arsenal have got a great history of some really talented, you know, theoretically central playmakers who've made very, very good careers on the wing. You'd have to think of, Pires is a great shout, but they've also been people like Andreas Schärfe, Tomasz Rosicki, Sami Nasri.
Freddie Ljungberg.
Yeah, they've all played from wide areas and fared really, really well. I mean, Freddie himself, I didn't see the TV coverage, was apparently a little bit, not critical, but sort of queried the decision to sign Odegaard, given that Arsenal have Smith Rowe, because he really sees Smith Rowe as a central player. I just think he's so versatile. And it's about how do we get more good creative players into the team? This is a way.
And I think what's really exciting me about Smith Rowe, you mentioned the word versatile. I'm not sure, it's not that I disagree with it, but I think, maybe I am agreeing with it, but I just think that you can put him into a number of positions. Perhaps that's the very definition of it. I don't know what's happened to my brain.
He's kind of multifunctional.
But he combines with everyone. Like, he's not just, you know, you could put him anywhere and he will work, if that makes sense. He's like, you know, one of those adapters you buy when you go on holidays. He's like a plug that you can
universal
use in Spain.
Adapter.
Yeah, a universal adapter.
And that's why he is a great number 10, by the way, because when he plays in that position, he can kind of interconnect with everybody on the field. I mean, I think there was a game, I think it was the West Brom game, he exchanged a pass with every outfield player. And he does have that capacity to kind of fill in the gaps. He's quite amorphous in the way he plays positionally. But there is something Odegaard brings. I know you've got a question about him that is different and that is worth inclusion. And if you want both in the team, I think this is how you do it.
Yeah. I mean, look, for all the panic of the last 10 minutes or so, and there was panic, I think one of the things that stood out to me yesterday from a player perspective was Smith Rowe and it was Odegaard. But I had a look at their stats and I had a look at their passing stats. And Odegaard was 96.6%, 97%. Smith Rowe, 97.3%.
Highest on the field,
To have players who give you that security in the opposition half and in your own half as well, but primarily that's where they operate, helps you control games. You know, we've missed that, I think, throughout this season. I mean, shout to Granit Xhaka as well. More passes than anybody else, and also at 94.3%. So I thought Xhaka had a very solid game, you know. He sort of made up for, not made up for, but, you know, he reacted well to what happened in the last game.
That's what he does.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Makes a mistake and he reacts well.
Yeah. But, you know, Odegaard and Smith Rowe, I think they're complementary. You know, I think we had a question about that. See if I can find it here.
I think they are too.
Yeah, Sean Adams who's at Sean Adams 13, said, was yesterday proof that Smith Rowe and Odegaard are not alternative number 10s, but are best used in tandem to create dangerous partnerships on both sides of the field at the same time. And I think there's something to that. You know, they can work together.
Yeah, and I think we've seen a bit of an uptick in terms of our performances at right back, whoever it's been, whether it's been Cedric or Bellerin. And I think Odegaard's part of that, because I think he creates some nice partnerships, some nice triangles and options on that side. You know, I think both can play centrally, and, you know, sometimes you will want to rotate them. But after seeing them together yesterday, I think it's a really exciting prospect. And I think they are complementary, because I think fundamentally they have different attributes.
Yeah.
You know, there are things they share, but there are things Smith Rowe does, that sprint being one of them, that Odegaard doesn't seem to be able to do, but things technically Odegaard can do that are really sublime. And Arteta spoke yesterday about the defensive shift that Odegaard put in, and I think maybe that's something that hasn't attracted as much attention, but he has worked exceptionally hard since he arrived.
Was it in the terrifying 10 minutes, or was it earlier in the game where he got back into the box? It could have been earlier in the game, actually. I'm just going through.
Maybe. I mean, when
it was early in the second half. Sorry, apologies. Early in the second half, where Spurs had a little bit of possession early on, and there was a moment where he got back from quite deep to defend in our box. It was a very important piece of defending. So, yeah, you're right to point that out.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when Aubameyang's been playing, Odegaard has almost been, you know, when we've been pressing or defending, Aubameyang's dropped left off, and then Odegaard's been defending from the front. He's made a really big contribution. I mean, for a loan signing in January, it's been a really good piece of business so far.
All right, so let's talk about him a little bit. On the Discord, Bunana, what's my name, says, really surprised, happy with Odegaard about how he went about his pressing duties, applying pressure all the way to the end of the match. Can we see him actively commanding, leading the press? Coupled with his technical ability, what a player we have on our hands. Could be a real bargain. Should we sign him on a permanent basis? And if so, what would be the right price and what would be too expensive? And Mark G says, Odegaard is starting to show what a talented player he is, and I think most Arsenal fans would like to keep him. A lot depends on the player himself and whether he wants to make the move permanent. Do you think the lack of fans in the stadium will work for us or against us in that regard? I can see it from both sides.
In terms of helping us keep him?
Yeah.
Well, we might have 10,000 fans for the last couple of games, so a huge onus on those guys who desperately plead with Martin Odegaard. I don't know. I hope we can keep him. I really do. What gives me hope is the fact that Madrid are potentially, you know, on the precipice of a rebuild. You know, it looks like they're going to come second, certainly, to their local rivals, Atletico Madrid, in La Liga. And, you know, there's a big turnover required there. Now, obviously, if you're looking to rebuild, a 22-year-old playmaker with international pedigree,
captain of his country now.
Yeah, recently made captain of Norway. I mean, you'd think that he'd be part of that. But if they decide they need to raise funds,
yeah,
equally, he is he's an obvious choice to sell, given that he's not been part of things there really this season.
It is a weird one, isn't it? Because the better he plays, the more we want to keep him. The better he plays, the more expensive he is going to be if Real Madrid are willing to let him go, and if he is willing to join
us. There is no agreement on a fee.
No.
So that is the position we're in. I have to say, he's got to be enjoying it, right?
Yeah. I mean, think about what kind of a reception he would have got yesterday at the final whistle. You know, to score in a North London derby and to be part of a winning team in your first derby and to play so well, you know, that would not have been lost on the Emirates crowd, you know? So that is something that is, it's missing. I wonder, are players able to, you know, compartmentalize that and realize that, you know, as much as we're missing being there as fans, they must be missing fans as well for what they bring to their own enjoyment of a game. You know, winning the game obviously is what they're out to do, but there's got to be something missing for them as well. So I do wonder how he can feel the love from the fans. It could be a factor.
Well, if I know anything about the Arsenal fans, it's that they've got a very active online community.
Really?
And I'm sure people are letting him know that he's appreciated. Whether or not that has quite the same emotional impact, I don't know. But it's not easy to find players like him, I don't think. I don't know what kind of spending power Arsenal will have this summer, if any, but he would be a very good start, a very, very good start.
Yeah.
Somehow get a deal done there.
I would like us to do it. I hope we can do it. It might require some, I don't know, another loan from...
Creative accounting.
Yeah. Buy some Bitcoin. Stand by Bitcoin or something. And you know, oh no, it destroys the planet, doesn't it, Bitcoin?
Yeah. I don't know. And I have no idea what the kind of ballpark figure would be. But if it's between, you know, if there's a player we can buy from Madrid that we've currently got on loan, for me, it's certainly him.
Yes.
He's the one I
would want. Not the other one.
No, the other one's not a bad player.
No, I just don't think he's as good as Odegaard or as valuable to what we
want. I don't think we need him as much.
Yeah.
And I think it's easier to find someone who could do a similar job. I think Odegaard has a real quality to the way he sees the game and the passes that he's able to make.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, I suppose one player who might be able to do what Danny Ceballos has done is Joe Willock, who's having a good loan spell, isn't he, at Newcastle so far? They seem to like him.
He's having a good loan spell, yeah. I don't know if that's just because he's playing in the right sort of team at the right sort of level for him.
Maybe. But where are Newcastle in the table?
Probably above us. Most people are, aren't they? I think he's having certainly a really interesting period, and he seems to be developing. They love him up there. They absolutely love him. I mean, they'll be as desperate to keep him as we are to keep Martin Odegaard.
Yeah. So,
two
Premier League assists this season for Danny Ceballos. That's it. 30 appearances in all competitions, two assists. So, you know, I don't think we'd be losing a huge amount if he were to go back to Real Madrid.
No, I personally think we would need somebody. You know, I think
No, I don't disagree. I think a midfielder has got to be on the list this summer. But like you say, if there's money to go to Real Madrid, it's got to be for Odegaard for me.
And if they want to do two for the price of one, I'm open to it. If they get desperate. You know,
It's challenging times.
Advantage.
Yeah, challenging financial times for not just us, but everyone. So there might be some odd deals. You never know.
You never know. What about this question from the Discord? KT, where do you think we are in our progression back to the top compared to Spurs? Personally, I'm convinced that we are comfortably a better team than them, despite the table. And this was confirmed by our dominance yesterday. And then with our comparative run-ins at St Tottenham's Day in a season where Arsenal fell out the big six and Spurs were title contenders, would be the sweetest of all.
I struggle with this kind of question because I could not give a fuck about Tottenham and their progression or where they are or what they're doing. And, you know, I wasn't particularly impressed with them, but Mourinho's a very experienced manager. Yeah, I mean, the idea that people were talking them up as title contenders earlier in the season is just ridiculous, obviously, because we all know of the history of the Tottenham. So, you know, it's like people haven't paid any attention. I'm just more concerned about who we are and what we're doing. And I know you can... There is, when we're better than they are, it's nice to say that and everything else, but I think we just need to focus on what we're trying to do and not worry about them too much, if you know what I mean. Does that make sense? Like, I just prefer to see what we're doing and how we can continue to make some progress and how we can win more games and get back to where we need to get to without holding us up against Tottenham. Because I think if we can do what we want to do, then that will be a natural consequence of it. I mean, being better than them and finishing higher than them will be a natural consequence of us making the kind of progress that we want to make.
Absolutely. And I do think when you look at our kind of key players, our best players, there are some really young players in there who are improving all the time. I mean, look at Smith Rowe, the way in which he's blossoming. We've eulogised about Bukayo Saka plenty of times on this podcast. When you look at Spurs, I think, you know, names like Alderweireld, Lloris, Bale, Kane, they are on the downward slope probably in terms of their trajectory.
Mm.
And so I'm full of optimism that if we don't get a St. Totteram's Day this year, we can't be far away. I agree with the question that I think we were the better side yesterday and we are the better side at this point in time. Any chance that we manage it this season, getting above them?
I don't know. There's four points in it. Look, nothing is impossible.
10 games.
Yeah, nothing is impossible. We've come back from further than that. If you remember, there was one year, wasn't there, we were 11 or 13 points behind them with, I can't remember how many games left, maybe 10 games, maybe a few more games than that. But that was the whole negative spiral thing. And we came back to finish in the top four. So look, as I keep saying, game by game by game by game for what's left of this season. You know, there's no...
Look, they've got to go to Man City.
Mm.
Oh, that's their final, actually. Apologies. No, they've got to go to Leicester. I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I would love it. But yeah, game by game. Let's just get the points on the
game board. Game by game by game, and then see where we are and if we can, you know, continue to make progress. All well and good. From the Discord, Duran says, "Hi, gents, great win. Ecstatic to beat Mourinho. But he said, when Partey misdirected a pass, we talked about this a little bit earlier, leading to a corner for Spurs, Luis started shouting at Partey, which led to another mistake and a giveaway to a Spurs player, leading to further shouting from members of the team. I understand that at the professional level and during high-stakes Premier League games, there's no time for mercy and forgiveness. The fiery emotions can't be contained, but every player is motivated differently, and it seems that all this shouting at Partey only worsened his confidence for the rest of the match. What are your thoughts?"
I don't think the shouting had as much impact on Partey's performance as the physical aspect.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I actually came out of yesterday's game with a sort of... I was probably a bit unfair on Thomas Partey because I sort of came out of the game thinking, I don't think you play very well there. I think that my opinion was sort of coloured by the last 20 minutes. I think he was actually pretty good up until that point.
Yep.
And then I think he just sort of ran out of steam. The shouting thing is interesting because... we can look at it and go, well, that's a sign of panic or anxiety. But then if Arsenal were quiet in that period and people like Luis and Xhaka weren't stepping up...
where's the leadership?
Stuff, exactly. You know? And we'd be saying, you just need somebody to take charge and show a bit of direction and show a bit of leadership.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's a difficult one. I think ultimately, you know, the shouting, the pointing, the remonstrating... is ultimately a bit of a sideshow. I think it's about what you do and can you play. You know, sometimes leadership is about can you play with a sense of calm? Can you play? Can you be in control in tense moments? And we didn't really manage that yesterday.
Yeah, I really just don't have any issue whatsoever with players, unless it like who was the was it Lee Bowyer and Kieran Dyer? Had a fight on the pitch. I mean, you don't want that. I mean, you do want it when it's the opposition. You want to see that all the time. You want to
Bender
see.
Bender and Adebayo, didn't they?
That was during the Birmingham game. So, but in general, I don't have any problem with players arguing or whatever on the pitch. You know, it's just part and parcel of football, talking, and sometimes the talking gets a bit intense, or there's a need to sort of, you know, get somebody's head right. Like, you know, it can be a positive thing being shouted at or being a shouter. You know, you're telling people to just book their ideas up. It happens at every level of football all the time. And I don't think a professional player like Thomas Partey is going to go, oh my God, David Luiz shouted at me. I feel
he played for Diego Simeone. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I think surely he's been shouted at a few times.
And I think you're right. It's the physical aspect of his game which let him down. I don't think it was the being shouted at that led to the mistakes. I think there's a fatigue there. He's not quite ready to do the 90 minutes. Maybe that 90 minutes will do him good, you know, in terms of making him, you know, better in the final stages of games. He hasn't played 90 minutes for us very often, and he's had some physical issues throughout this season. So, you know, that was an intense game yesterday as well. And before that, I thought he was very good, made some excellent passes, made some tackles, took some shots. I mean, I think he needs to work on his shooting. That would be.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because, you know, he scored some good goals for Ghana. I feel like it's becoming the David Luiz of free, like with his free kicks. You know? He did it for Brazil once, but I like his willingness to take the shot on. I think that adds something. But I did think of you yesterday, actually, when the couple went very far wide. Here's a question from Mark Morrow. No relation to Steve, as far as I'm aware. In rugby union, the England coach has finishers. This involves leaving some of his best players on the bench to come on and finish the game when the opposition are tired. Is it possible that Arteta sees Pepe as our finisher?
I don't know if that concept necessarily applies to football, because it's a much lower scoring sport than rugby.
And less substitutions.
So no, I don't think so. I just think he's been a little bit unlucky to be left out of the team. You know, Saka's form on the right-hand side has caused him a problem, and Emile Smith Rowe doing what he does on the left-hand side, again, slightly differently to, you know, what you get if you played Pepe on the left. You get something different than what you get for Smith Rowe, and that seems to be what Arteta likes at this moment in time. And I do wonder if the combination with Tierney over there as well is part of it. So no, I don't think he's a finisher, and I'm not sure you can really apply that concept to football, although I do think you can use your substitutions more effectively than we have. But that's a wider issue, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, I mean, Pepe is the kind of guy as a defender you don't want to see coming on when you're feeling a bit tired. He's a nightmare to face, but I think he's shown he can do it early in games as well. You know, certainly the Leicester game, he looked at it right from the first whistle. So I mean, listen, I feel like I say this every week. I'm optimistic there'll be game time for him in the next 7 days. You'd think he's got a good chance.
I think he'll start on Thursday. I think he'll start on Thursday.
Yeah, I do too.
Here is a question from Ashley Moss, who's at Ashley Moss 4. He says, morning, guys. I thought Tierney was outstanding yesterday. Should we already be considering giving him a new contract? If he keeps playing like this, surely people will start taking notice of him. So giving him the new deal now makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. I think if you look at, you know, the expectations when he arrived, they were good, but I don't think anybody thought he'd be quite as good as he has been. I think he's clearly one of the most important players. Also, he's the right kind of age. You know, he's the kind of age, early 20s, that we want to build around, who can be part of this team for the next 5 years and beyond.
Exactly. Those are the
He'd be
the
at the top of my list.
Yeah.
You know?
Me too. Do it, do it, do it, do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
I think it's him. You know, Smith Rowe is a contract conversation that needs to happen. I think there's a case for Bernd Leno as well. But Tierney, I would absolutely pay him whatever he wants. And I think it's right to say he'll be looked at. I don't think that just because he's, you know, Scottish and he came down from Celtic, I don't think we've got any divine right to him. I think clubs will be looking at him.
For sure. But I do think this is the kind of club at which he could be very happy, if you like, for a long period of time.
Well, again,
do you know what I mean?
I think how fans would react to his performances, you know?
Yeah.
He was adored in Glasgow, and he would be here in full stadiums. And it's a shame he's not getting that reception week in, week out.
He'd have a song by now, wouldn't he? Does he have a song? He doesn't.
Not one that springs to mind. Do you know, that was actually the moment I felt the absence of the fans most plainly. It was when Emma Smith Rowe was substituted, and you were like, this is a standing ovation moment.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
It should be like a kind of coronation of like, hey, you're not a kid. You played today in the derby. Well, probably, you know, maybe Arsenal's best player.
Yeah.
He really, really deserved that ovation. They should have piped one in.
Fake standing ovations, or maybe they could get, you know, those wobbly standy up things that with the wavy arms, you know?
Yeah.
The car that they have at used car dealerships.
Inflatable.
Yeah, you know. Just have one of those on the other side of a stadium, and as and when players who play well are taken off, push the button and it gives the fake crowd noise and those guys all stand up. That'd be good.
I'd like that. Yeah. I'd like that. Did you ask me that question? I think you did.
I did, about Tierney, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm just having a look to see if I've got another good one here. If you've got one, to ask me while I have a look.
Okay. Beardy McBeardface, who's at Bearded Hannon, says, what would it take for Harry Kane to get sent off?
I don't know. To kill a man?
No, I don't think so. That's not enough. Not sufficient.
It wouldn't get a replay. If he slew a centre-half with a sword, they wouldn't show it on Match of the Day 2.
No, I mean, he'd have to. It depends on the sword. I'd say if he had maybe a cutlass, you know, not just a regular old sword, because, you know, but if he had
would have
a cutlass,
because he's an old-fashioned sort of guy, isn't he, Harry Kane?
H.
H. He's coming, H.
Just slice his head off, H.
The voice in his head that makes him do all these things is actually Joe Hart. That's what we'll discover.
Mm. So, yeah. So you think it would be... I mean, what about if he took to the field with a hockey mask and a chainsaw?
Mm.
And...
I think it would go to a VAR appeal.
What if he cut the VAR referee in half?
He'd be held as a national hero, presumably, and quite rightly so in that instance. But I honestly can't imagine... I mean, as far as I can, he sort of goes around the football pitch like Wile E. Coyote, sort of setting these dastardly traps for people to fall and break their neck.
Yeah.
And seemingly without repercussion. I think there'll be a Netflix documentary about it one day. Like, how did this man get away with trying to kill people on a football pitch?
That would be a good one, all right.
Yeah. It is weird. I've kind of accepted it at this stage. I mean... It ain't going to change.
I'm just looking on my Twitter. It says Harry Kane is trending. So, okay. I'm looking at, okay. Watch Harry Kane's brutal challenge on Gabriel as Arsenal fans question why VAR didn't send Spurs star off in Derby. That's from The Sun, so I ain't clicking that shit. Let's see. There's just a lot of clips of Harry Kane clattering into Gabriel. That's why he's trending.
Well, quite right too. I mean,
former
the thing is,
Premier League referee Dermot Gallagher does not believe Harry Kane should have been sent off for Tottenham after his challenge on Arsenal's Gabriel. Gallagher says the England captain did not take to the field with a sharpened cutlass. Therefore, no red card offence took place. So, look, you've got it straight from the...
Well, there you go. The horse's mouth. Yeah. This was quite a strange question. Petrucci Coig says... Come on, you Gunners. Says, do we need a left-footed centre-forward option? The plethora of pullback chances we create on the left sometimes feel wasted, as the sharp angled shot on their weak foot is far from Oba or Lacazette's bread and butter. While having deeper lying left-footed runners like Odegaard and Pepe is great, Martin is perhaps set to leave soon, and Pepe is a variable asset on the right. So do we need a left-footed centre-forward?
Who's set to leave soon? Odegaard.
Well,
yeah.
I think he means presumably if he goes back.
Okay, yeah. Sorry. I mean... I just think you need a good striker. You don't necessarily have to have a left-footed option, just someone who can kick with their left foot, which, you know, a professional player should be able to do. You know, Bamiyang has scored some good goals with his left foot, hasn't he? Think about the FA Cup final. So, yeah, I can see, but I don't think you specifically target a striker because of his foot. You target him because of how good he is. And if he happens to be left-footed, then great. And if not, don't worry about it. So I don't know that you build your squad in the same way. I think it's perhaps slightly different from the when you talk about defenders. Because quite obviously, we've gone out of our way to bring in a couple of left-footed central defenders. But that has more of an impact on the way you can play from the back, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think part of Mikel Arteta's reliance on Granit Xhaka is probably to do with the fact that he plays from that side and he gives you a build-up option. Do we need a left-footed striker? I don't think we do. I think in Saka and Pepe and Odegaard, you know, we have left-footed players who are capable of arriving in the box. Pepe, when he plays from the right, does that very well, you know, kind of arrives around the six-yard box or penalty spot from a pullback from the left. It's where he missed the very good chance against Burnley.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, on the pitch yesterday, we had Saka, Odegaard, Xhaka, Tierney, Gabriel, all left-footers. Is that a lot of left-footers by any standards?
Interesting question. I think by standards of previous Arsenal teams, I would say it is. I'd have to sort of look into it at Premier League level and say, you know, it feels very athletic, this, doesn't it?
It does.
We counted how many left-footed players are in every team ever. But yeah, no, I mean, there is a lot of balance. And one of the things, you know, I think that's sort of become maybe clear about the way Arteta wants to set this team up going forward. I think he likes having a left footer on the right. I think he likes having a right footer on the left. I think he likes the natural kind of underlap and overlap that creates with a fullback outside them.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. We'll see what we do in the summer in terms of who we bring in and what foot they kick with.
Bring back Giroud is what we're saying, right?
Let's not go there. Okay, look, I think we better leave it there for this one, no? Because I'm sure people will be wanting to listen to the podcast. So if you've got this far, thank you very much indeed. Hope you enjoyed the win yesterday as much as we did. Hope you enjoyed all the tears and all the saltiness and all the miserableness of everybody who is associated with Tottenham, from players to staff and fans, who James knows personally, pretty much all of them, it seems.
Yeah. Listen, I'm just taking the temperature. I just, you know,
no, good.
I hop in the water.
You're doing us a service. What can I say?
Exactly. You don't want to be engaged.
No, I don't. I'm glad that you're out there, you know, putting yourself in those kind of areas, those online spaces, etc.
Well, you know, I take a lot of risks for you guys. I'm very brave.
Well, we love you for it. So thank you very much indeed. And to everyone listening, look, thanks a million as always. We will have a preview pod for Patreon members for the Olympiacos game. We'll do that for you on Wednesday. And we'll have more regular Arsecast goodness for you on Friday as well, after the Olympiacos game. And hopefully we can continue on this nice little run of form that we're on. So until the next one, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.